spring and it's loud still. We are here. Episode 109, 109, 109, 100 plus 9, 50 plus 50 plus 9. I'm not going to push my luck. My math equations are on point so far. This is the ATP podcast, Around the Post. It's your boy Jay. Mark Figueroa is in the building. He is well prepared today. And I feel fantastic. How do you feel today?
I'm pretty good. A couple news here and there, so just ready to let you guys hear it.
We have Alcaraz news today.
We do.
I'm excited for that. And you know what's funny, man? So we have this docket of information and topics you provided, and I don't really know what any of it is, but I felt like I was watching tennis all week. Like, I watched the majority of match play that's been happening over the past 7 days, and I still feel like I'm out of the loop, so I'm excited for this episode.
Yes, a lot of it is more off-court stuff than on-court, so the events are pretty small right now.
Yeah, they are. So, all right, let's get it started. Where are we going today?
Okay, we're going to start with Coco Gauff. First off, she's at a new career high of 11 in the world.
Knocking on that door hard.
Exactly, and she just landed a deal with New Balance to launch her first signature shoe. So what are your thoughts on Coco Gauff's new high ranking and her signature line of New Balance shoes?
I love her slow and steady grind and climb. I love that she's not getting blown up with endorsements to distract her the way we've seen all the other young stars getting distracted. And I know that her shoe is not going to be good looking. So that's...
Yeah, New Balance really doesn't come up with...
They don't have an aesthetic shoe. They have a comfortable shoe. They make a good shoe. But yeah, they don't have stylish shoes, in my opinion. They're not very innovative with design. So, yeah, you know, good for her. I'm very happy for her. I have high hopes for her still. But she's very much taking a slower route. And I think it's going to pay off for her.
Yes, on court, she's actually performing well. She's training hard.
Yeah.
She's worked on her serve, worked on her forehand. So
great head on her shoulders.
So I'm excited for her and a new chapter in her tennis career, and proud, not proud, but happy for her because she's getting a little bit of endorsements here and there and not being overwhelmed. So
they're coming before the slam.
Right.
Before the championship.
Exactly.
You know, so these companies are with her for the long haul. That means a lot.
Yes.
So...
So we're going to move on to Williams sisters news. Mm-hmm. So first off, Venus Williams is going to make her debut at the City Open in Washington. And she has a big schedule for the U.S. Open series. Canada, City Open, Cincinnati. Wow. Are you expecting big things from Venus Williams?
It's tricky with Venus because you can never count Venus Williams out. I think we spoke about it maybe within the last two episodes, but it's not that long ago she went all the way to slam. It's not that far back. It's within the last 5 years. So maybe, yeah, about 5 years. So for me, it's one of those things where because of how wide open the WTA is, I feel like there's incentive and you should have belief that she can make some noise because of that. So the way she hits the ball, the way she performs on a hard court or a grass court, I think that she still has fire in the tank and fuel in the tank to do some good things. But also, I do want to keep in mind that these are tune-up events, technically.
Yes.
So we can't expect her to make super deep runs before she gets her feet wet, finds her ground and tempo and stuff like that. So I'll give her a little bit of time. I know she did play a little doubles, right?
Yes.
So she's not completely, you know... cold turkey here when she starts, so I'm expecting her to be ready for the U.S. Open.
Yeah, she's making a hard run right now. She hasn't played singles in a while now, so I'm actually excited to see what she has.
Yeah.
Now, going on to little sister Serena, now she's taking it super serious. She means business. So she's, of course, playing in Canada and in Cincinnati as well, but she stated that she made a replica court in her backyard of the U.S. Open surface.
Really?
What are your thoughts on her doing that, and do you give her a big shot to make a deep run at the U.S. Open?
1,000% I do. For me, whenever Serena comes back and she's in that grind serious mode, the only thing stopping her is Naomi Osaka. Like, to me, that's the only thing that's a true threat to her. Her strokes looked amazing when she played against Han, I believe it was.
Yes, and Wimbledon.
Yeah, her strokes looked phenomenal. It was the cardio and the legwork, which she's going to improve at steadily as she continues on the tour. So that's going to come. She didn't look super bloated and heavy. She just looked a little sluggish, and that'll come back. So for me with Serena, as long as she can stay healthy, which is a big if these days, I do anticipate her making a deep run. I really do.
This is the first time I've heard of her doing such a thing.
That's huge.
So I think she means business. And for all the haters out there and doubters, oh, she's going to retire, this and this and this, she's sending a loud message that she's here to stay.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting big things from her, and she's taking the proper tune-up events to do so.
Let me ask you a question. Is there any significant sign or reason why we should count Serena out? Can you think of any?
Right now, the WTA top 10, it hasn't been showing a lot of improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Iga, she's still a good hard court player.
Yeah.
But I really can't see who would stop Serena unless she has some sort of condition to where she can't compete.
Yeah. If Iga's Serena's greatest stoppage and threat, and that's the number one player in the world, you know, I mean, it's the number one player in the world. Of course that's a threat, you know? So to me, that's a great sign.
Right. So now we're going to move on to Naomi Osaka. Now, this is last week's news, but it was released on Thursday. She split with her longtime coach, Wim Visit.
Mm.
They won 2 Grand Slams together.
Mm-hmm.
And Visit said, okay, thank you. I appreciate the fact that you gave me an opportunity to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the second time now that she's actually had a nice little run with 2 pretty good coaches. And then she splits just all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on her split with Wim Visit, who she won 2 slams with?
I think that she's probably in a place of a plateau in her head. And I think that she lives in her head, you know. So some of these athletes, they feel that if they're not breaking personal records, they're addicted to progress. And when they slow down and have to grind it out and realize it's a marathon, not a sprint, some of them lose patience with the things around them. And they try to make these drastic changes to maintain this crazy tempo that they had when they had nothing to lose. It doesn't work that way on the tour. So I think that Osaka is trying to find a way to replicate the euphoric run she started with, and you're chasing something you'll never get back. You know, unless you're Federer, you know, a run like that is not supposed to last 5 years, 3 years, or anything like that. It's definitely a breakout and then a maintain process, not a breakout, breakout, breakout over and over type of thing. So I think that she should have probably stayed with that coach unless they had creative differences of some type with the way her career is supposed to go. And to me, it's very weird to get rid of a coach without having a planned coach to replace your coach. You know, there's got to be a reason. You know, if you find someone who can bring new things to the table, either hire both coaches or drop one coach to have the other. But to just drop a coach, it seems a bit dramatic, in my opinion, especially for a WTA player where you work with your coach live at matches, live on tour. They know your habits. They know your weaknesses and your strengths. It's a little bit surprising.
Now, she just started her sports agency.
Yeah.
Obviously, we do know that Nick Kyrgios is a client.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing I can speculate is that she's trying to do things on her own, mm-hmm. try to do her own thing. Which to me is kind of weird because she has a lot of success with this guy.
Yeah.
And she did it with Sasha Bayan as well, to where as soon as she gets some sort of progress and gets going, she just shies away from it.
Yeah.
So this is U.S. Open time. We do know she has a couple U.S. Opens. Do you think she's going to make a run at the U.S. Open?
You have to always respect Naomi Osaka on a hardcourt Grand Slam. You have to. But at the same time, this has not been her year, per se. I do think that if there was any year where we should be less concerned, this is the year. She seems to have a lot going on mentally, a lot on her plate, and a little bit less dialed in than usual. The fact that she also has a less stable camp as well is a negative sign for me. So if I'm Serena, I am screaming in my house going, yes, keep making changes, keep trying to figure things out right before the hardcore season goes crazy, and I'm going to capitalize. So Osaka, I hope, is focused, even if it's just focused within herself, but that's very unlikely.
Oh, yes, I agree. Moving on, since we just mentioned Nick Kyrgios, he withdrew from Atlanta with an injury, but he's getting a big praise because he stepped out in front of the fans and said, I'm sorry, guys. I wanted to compete in front of you guys. I'm a champion here, but I just can't do it. I'm going to try to play doubles with Kokkinakis, but I don't want to push my body before the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
If you're a Nick Kyrgios fan, are you concerned?
For me, this seems to be a bit more proactive work than reactive work because he's playing doubles. The fact that he's playing doubles is very reassuring. I believe he played with Kokkinakis and won their first match. So he's in a good place. And in my opinion, I think that he's taking his performance on the tour extremely seriously right now. So I'm going to trust what he's saying here. And I'm going to assume that he's doing what he can to make sure he plays his best tennis at the U.S. Open. Because to be totally honest with you, he should be in your top five picks to win the U.S. Open.
I agree. And we do know that at the U.S. Open, anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to move on to Lorenzo Musetti. Mm-hmm. He's been the future for a while now.
Yeah.
That with that beautiful one-handed backhand, he was up 2-0 on Djokovic. He was supposed to win that match. Well, he finally came through and beat Alcaraz in Hamburg for his first title in the ATP, and he is also in the top 50 now.
Yeah.
Are you expecting big things from Lorenzo Musetti?
I don't want to call it big things, but he's a major contender. I expect him to be present in any tournament he's a part of and the threat. I'm happy for him that he won that tournament. And, you know, I'm happy he beat Alcaraz this year because this was Alcaraz. But this is a year where that's a significant win. That win means something this year. So I think that makes that title win more respectable and more admirable as well. And I look forward to what he's got going on next. That was a clay event.
Correct.
So that, for me personally, that means that win carries over to this next run a little bit less, but it's still impressive.
Yes, I'm expecting big things. He has been showing a lot of improvement, and I'm expecting him to come to the next level for sure.
Yeah.
Now we're going to move on to Goran predictions.
Mm.
Now, he said that he knew.
Hold on, time out. For our listeners who don't know who Goran is, can you just give them a little brief backstory?
Goran Ivanisevic is a Wimbledon, a former Wimbledon champion.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he's the first to win as a wild card.
Yeah.
And he is the coach of Novak Djokovic.
Yes, great player. Incredible serve, lefty. He's a monster.
And he was the reason why Cilic won the U.S. Open.
Yes, he was.
So he made a prediction that he said that he predicted years ago. He stated that right before he got to be Djokovic's coach, he said that Djokovic and Nadal would surpass Federer in the title run, and that there was no way that Federer was going to catch up to them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that he made that prediction?
I think he nailed it. You know, the thing is, and this is coming from a guy who prefers Federer over both of them. I love Federer. But ultimately, Djokovic and Nadal are destined to be first and second place in the slam total. You know. And I had a dream statistic where everyone tied at 20 and just stopped. That was my dream. But the next gen just couldn't help me out there.
So. Yeah. Medvedev did a little bit.
Yeah, Medvedev did a little bit, but Dominic's team just ghosted us. And he was kind of the forerunner.
Yeah, he was the one.
Yeah, he was the chosen one that was going to make a lot of noise at all of the clay events, including the French and and hopefully the U.S. Open. But, you know, all that aside, I think that Goran's very trustworthy. I don't know if you remember, but he helped Milos Raonic make some major noise.
Yes.
They got together and he made some huge noise. And then, you know, I find that wherever Goran goes, success follows. I don't know what he's doing with these players, whether it's just tweaking their service motions or just his swagger and his mindset, but he's a great energy and atmosphere around these pro players. And I find that whatever he believes and whatever he says, it tends to manifest. So I have a lot of respect for him as a coach.
Yes, he has tweaked a lot of serves for sure. Mm-hmm. And Djokovic's weakest shot was his serve.
Yeah.
He even had elbow problems because of it. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as Goran came in, it's a weapon.
Yeah.
So he's done a great job. Mm-hmm. Now he's making another bold prediction. And he said, stop comparing Alcaraz to the big three because he will never be them. Do you agree with that?
I do agree that he will never be them. But on the flip side, I don't think that people are really comparing him to them per se.
They're comparing him to Nadal.
I think that he is a baby of Nadal, and we've never seen that on the tour before.
Sure.
That is huge. So we've seen baby Federers, Federer replicants, Federer fans, you know, guys who you can smell the Federer on them. I mean, I'd go as far as giving you three or four right now. Dimitrov, Tsitsipas, Kyrgios even. You know, these guys, Chapo, these are guys that watched Federer and they want to be Federer. They want to look good while winning. That's what these guys want. You know, and it's, you can smell it on them. And then there's the Felixes and the, you know, the guys who are defensive, complete games. They're very baby Djokovic-ish, you know. But we've never really seen a baby Nadal before. And I think that because we're finally seeing it in Alcaraz, maybe that's why we want to start making these crazy ambitious claims, because we've never seen a baby Nadal, which means, you know, not only do you have the skill set, but you have that dog in you, that it's just that extra spark, that extra ball you get to, that extra athletic spark within you. Alcaraz has that. But I don't want to confuse that with comparing him with the big three. I think that's a misconception.
He has the weaponry to do so. He definitely, in my opinion, has more shot selection than Nadal at that age. Although yeah. Nadal did win at 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And Alcaraz is 19 already, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So I will give him that. He's made it to five finals on the ATP this year.
Yeah.
And he's at a new career high of five in the world.
Mm.
So he's making a claim that he's going to be around for a long time.
And I agree.
And yes, it's kind of unfair to compare him because that puts a lot of pressure on him. Mm-hmm. But that's what the media loves to do. So
yeah.
And of course, he is the youngest player since Nadal to make it into the top five. So people just can't stop making that comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's insane because in 2020, he was 330 in the world.
Wow.
2 years later, he's number five. So he has proven that he has the mechanics and mm-hmm. he can compete even against Djokovic.
He has a complete game.
He has the complete game. So he's going to make his mark for sure.
This is what I want to make a cross comparison to, because people, when Felix first hit the tour, he had extremely heavy Djokovic comparisons. And he just wasn't able to turn the potential in comparisons into direct results. What's different about Alcaraz, where he's able to win these tournaments a little sooner, beat these bigger players a little easier? What is he doing different? Is it the mentality?
He has the fighting Nadal spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And he definitely has a little bigger weaponry than Felix.
Okay. And I think that part of it also is, if we're going to continue this comparison thing, Nadal found success and himself a lot sooner than Djokovic did.
Yes.
So if Felix is truly Djokovic Jr., it took Djokovic a lot more time to master his craft and find who he is on the court.
That's true. And if the thing that impresses me about Alcaraz the most is his footwork.
Yeah.
He has amazing footwork and he's relentless.
Mm-hmm.
So he's above for sure.
Yeah.
And now the last topic, big Laver Cup news.
Oh.
Huge.
Oh.
I guess Team World is in deep trouble.
No.
Djokovic has decided to join Team Europe, I'm sorry.
Oh my god.
Putting the big four together.
What?
Yes. So I'm assuming it's because Djokovic isn't allowed to play a lot of tournaments.
Yeah.
So he's all right, let me do this one. What are your thoughts on Djokovic joining Team Europe, and does Team World even stand a fighting chance?
So you're telling me Laver Cup's anticipating having Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Djokovic, and Andy Murray?
Correct.
This is going to be the best Team Europe team we've seen put together. And as of so far, Team World looks like it's not in the top two teams I've seen put together. So this is concerning. This is very concerning. On the flip side, we are seeing a weaker Federer.
Yeah.
That's a plus. You can say
that. Sure.
But we're seeing a great Andy Murray, a great Djokovic, and a great Nadal. That's frightening because that's three wins. So it will be interesting to see where this goes. It will be fantastic to watch. I'm highly anticipating watching. But yeah, Team World is getting washed.
And right now it's Schwartzman, Fritz.
Nope.
I believe Ali Yassim.
Mm.
And Nick Kyrgios hasn't really committed.
Yeah.
So they need Kyrgios, Sock, Isner to get that doubles win.
They do.
Now here's the nail in the coffin. Everybody's excited because Federer's agency has gotten a hold of Carlos Alcaraz to potentially join Team Europe. And they're in negotiations, and it appears that it can happen to where Alcaraz will join the big four in Team Europe.
Oh, no.
If Alcaraz joins, is it definitely over?
Nail in the coffin. I will say this. Alcaraz on an indoor hard court is far less threatening than where he's been winning at. Still a great player. That's still a great recruit. Oh, my goodness. For him to be third or fourth string is mind-boggling because he's an amazing athlete and he's playing out of his mind this year. But I'm trying to think to myself, who's the best player on Team World?
Statistically this year, it's going to have to be Fritz.
If I go off the rankings,
right,
just the pure rankings, the best player who's not from Europe is Felix Auger-Aliassime. That's the best player.
And he's top 15?
He's number 9 in the world.
Okay, at 9. The that's not bad. He's
number
okay.
9. Taylor Fritz is number 12, so you weren't far off.
Right.
That's sad. Those are our top 2. I am frightened. I'm totally frightened because after that, where's Schwartzman from?
He's from Argentina.
Okay. Yeah, he's the next guy. Then Riley Opelka. It's rough.
If Team World is depending on Kyrgios and Sock too,
yeah,
for that doubles win,
yeah, it's an ugly situation for Team World. I just can't imagine out of the top 10, there's only one guy who's not from Europe,
right?
In the top 10 to 20, I think we've got 1, 2, 3, 4. No, 3. We have 3 guys in the rankings between 10 and 20 who are not from Team Europe. So it's startling that we have technically 4 players in the top 20 who aren't in Europe. So things aren't looking good this year, and it's just what it is. So let's just enjoy the moment for what it is and not expect to win.
And now the biggest thing is that if Carlos Alcaraz does play, everybody's out. Whoa, the big four are going to take him under their wing. And they'll show him something. You've seen Federer coach Nadal.
Yes.
You've seen Nadal coach Federer. Do you think that Alcaraz can learn something from the big four?
Expect a huge viral moment from Nadal coaching Alcaraz during a singles match. That will be a huge moment for professional tennis and for the internet. I look big. Forward to that.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
So if it does happen, it's a done deal. Mm-hmm. But it'll be exciting to see all of it put together.
I'm ready.
Yes. Yeah, so is there, do you have any news?
Nothing major. I told you I was watching a lot of tennis right now. And I can say that Dominic Thiem,
he's coming up.
He's 20 feet behind the baseline and he's winning. So I'm looking forward to his future and what he's doing. And he's really coming back into form. He reminds me, I think I said this last episode, he's reminding me a lot of early Dominic Thiem, who was playing 50 tournaments, working his way back up the rankings. He looks like that right now. So I have high hopes for him, and I do think he will make his return to the top 20.
Yes, I can see that. The way he's playing right now, I can definitely see it for sure. So, yeah, he's making a run, and he's actually up about 65 spots now.
Yeah.
So he's making a run.
He's playing no games. He's playing tournaments and beating the players in the tournaments, and he's doing it his way. He got lucky that clay circuit was a little extended. He's taking advantage of that, but, I mean, that's good for his legs and his body. He's hitting more balls.
Sure.
So.
Yes. So I'm expecting big things from Dominic Thiem for sure. So if there is no other news, that concludes this episode, and I hope you guys were entertained.
ATP, episode 109. I believe. We will see you next week. Adios.